I'm Tiffany Lopez, and you're listening to Posh Incredible Podcast, where I interview ordinary people who are making extraordinary transformations in their lives and for others. I believe we're all here to transcend and assist the ones around us to grow into the people they were born to be. The pathway of awakening is a noble life pursuit, and it starts now. Today, I'm talking with Heather Haney. Heather is an account director at Adaptly, where she specializes in social strategy. Heather is a true badass at work, creating and managing multi-million dollar campaigns. She's often asked to guest author articles for sites like MarTech Advisor, and she's been awarded Adaptly's Be Remarkable Company Award. Heather is so meticulous about improving processes that her team votes her MPV. Heather moved to New York on a whim, and she's super passionate about women's rights. Welcome to the show, Heather. Hello, everyone. This is Tiffany, and I'm here with my friend Heather Haney. I know Heather through one of our mutual friends, Jamie. Actually, my best friend, Jamie, is also best friends with Heather, and they live together. And we're here in my living room in Brooklyn. I just rearranged it, so Heather's getting first look.
It's beautiful. You did a great job.
Thank you. Still needs some work. We're drinking some ginger turmeric tea, and I decided to take the year off of alcohol just in time to find some amazing champagne flutes that I love and I have been looking for ages. So we're drinking sparkling water.
At least it's sparkling, so it's kind of like champagne.
Yeah, yeah, and it's gold, so it looks like it's champagne.
Could be champagne, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Imagination is key.
Oh, yeah. By the way, this is our first podcast. I'm not really sure what to call it yet. It doesn't have a name. Maybe you have any names coming to mind?
I'll keep my mind open, but nothing right now.
Yeah, okay. One thing I'm really curious about is, how did you get here? Not physically.
So when a man loves a woman. I'm just kidding. Well, how do you mean get here? Like in my career?
In career and life. So you've been in New York for 5 years?
Three years.
And before that, you were in California. And coincidentally, we lived
like 15 minutes from each other.
Yeah, like 15 minutes from each other. But we didn't know each other. What brought you to New York? Have you always been, do you mind if I say where you work? Are we allowed to like drop names here? Would you rather not?
Yeah, you can.
Okay. So Heather works at Adaptly. Mm-hmm. What I want to know is like, did you start working there when you got here? Were you working somewhere else? How did that all happen?
Yeah. So my first job out of college was at an online women's health magazine publisher. They've since gone out of business, but when I worked there, I worked in affiliate marketing. So we did lead gen by converting affiliate traffic, and as a part of that, one of my perks, because my boss really liked me, was a trip to New York for Affiliate Summit East. So the first time I came out here, I like fell in love with it, the city, and decided that I wanted to move here. So when I went back home, I started applying for jobs just to like, not really with any idea that I'd actually get one. And then I ended up getting one, and it was in email marketing. So I quit my job in California and moved out here without ever having like met any of the people in person that I was going to be working with or having any in-person interview. It was kind of a scary move. But yeah, so then I moved out here in October of 3 years ago. What is that, 2014, 2015? I don't know. In October. And I worked in email marketing. So I worked at a company called Yesmail, which is a subsidiary of Info Group. So their competitor is like a Cheetah Mail, not so much like a Constant Contact or a MailChimp. So we like serviced enterprise clients that had like massive email lists. My main client there was Kenneth Cole. So I did that for about a year. I didn't really like it because it wasn't very, it's kind of stale email. You can only do so much with because you have a list of emails and that's really all you can do.
Wait, can we back up real quick?
Yeah.
Did you always want to do marketing or digital marketing? What did you study in school?
So, yeah.
Where'd you go to school?
So I went to school. I've graduated from Cal State Long Beach I studied psychology. So my goal had always been to be a psychologist. But to be a psychologist, you have to obviously go to grad school and do all that.
Yeah.
And to go to grad school, you have to do research in undergrad and like get teachers' recommendations and volunteer and all that stuff. And I paid my way through college. So I didn't have, I worked basically full time, like 35 hours a week while going to school full time. So I didn't have time to do any of that other stuff to like get into grad school. I'd always planned on like maybe going back, but then I just fell into marketing. Literally, it was a Craigslist ad. I mean, I graduated college in 2012, which is like, I guess we were coming out of the housing boom recession situation. I mean, it wasn't easy to get a job.
No.
So I went on a bunch of interviews and I had, you know, my resume was like working at a seashell store and being like an IT administrative assistant. But these people took a chance on me for whatever reason. I barely even knew how to use Excel when I got my first job out of college. So I really just fell into it. And I ended up really enjoying it because a lot of it was really related to psychology. And people always think that like marketing is related to psychology because you're like analyzing people's behaviors. But it's more that it's just really analytics heavy. So it's a lot of like looking and comparing a data set to another data set, which is the basis of psychology versus trying to like predict. I mean, you are predicting behavior, but it's not like, I know that people think this way about certain things, so that means this marketing creative is going to work. At least that's not the part that I work in.
Right. This is so interesting because I never knew that you studied psychology.
Mm. Yeah.
I studied business. My emphasis was global business and supply chain management. Mm. And if I had known that that was basically studying math, I would have gone into psychology, which is like my first love. And if I known, so business was mostly math. I'm not a math person.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, I wanted to do supply chain, which is like double math.
Yeah.
And if I had known that, I just would have gone into marketing.
Yeah. Makes sense.
So it's funny. The more that I learn about marketing, the more I realize how psychological it is.
Yeah.
Also.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a lot of analysis. It's kind of math heavy, but not math heavy in like the way like business would be. But it's math heavy because you're calculating CPM, click-through rates, CPCs, comparing those, looking at percent differences. If you're doing like research studies, you're looking at standard deviation, statistical significance. So all that stuff is still incorporated in digital marketing. But a lot of that is also the same way you'd set up a psych study. So if you're going to compare a control group versus an exposed group, that's literally what we do in marketing. It's the same thing, but it's how people react towards an ad versus how people react towards stale donuts left in front of them. Yeah.
So has most of your training been through your jobs in data marketing?
Yeah.
I mean, digital marketing?
I mean, some of my, like, because there's such a lot of, because there's so much crossover between what I learned in psychology and marketing, I had a good baseline knowledge. But yeah, most of my training has been on the job. I mean, so I've worked at Adaptly now for a little over 2 years. I didn't know anything about social advertising. I knew like a little bit from my first job out of college, but not nearly as much as I know now. So I've learned everything I know about it from this job. And there's a lot to know for social. So it's been a good learning experience.
So you you manage some pretty big client profiles, and that was I didn't know that you had worked for email marketing before that, but it sounds like you were handed some pretty massive clients. I was just acknowledging that. That's pretty cool because not a lot of people get to work with, you know, those big clients right out of school.
Yeah. I mean, I manage, you know, upward, like, you know, $10 million plus dollars in media spend a year. It's a lot of responsibility. It's crazy, but it's awesome having the bigger clients. And especially I'm lucky to have clients that are really innovative and really strategic thinking, so we can do really cool stuff. I know that's not always the case. Some people, especially with social, because social, you know, 5 years ago or 6 years ago, well, Facebook is only, 10 years old, but back when marketing first became a thing on social, people used it as community management. And, you know, back then there was organic reach. So you could just like post on your Facebook page and like it would reach an audience. Whereas now, because of the updates of the Facebook algorithm, organic reach doesn't really mean anything, but some people, marketers, are still looking at the cost per fan or doing fan acquisition. But based off of how things work now, those are just not, they're what we call vanity metrics, and they're not, they don't serve any purpose. But I work with some pretty innovative clients that actually use like the really intricate tools that Facebook has to drive business objectives.
What's something cool that a client's done lately?
So I work for a retail client that's kind of going through a brand relaunch right now. And what's fun about that is it's you have to utilize a full funnel strategy. So reintroducing a brand, you need to like change people's perception of that brand. And to do that, you have to get mass reach and focus on frequency. So finding that point of audience saturation and the right amount of times that we're hitting somebody with an ad is interesting. And to see those results through a brand lift study is interesting. So we're going through that right now. But then also, I mean, my clients just like test out new ad units. So Facebook is always coming out with like new stuff to as ad units. So there's like canvases, there's collection ads. A lot of these things take advantage of like Facebook feeds or I'm sorry, product feeds. So it dynamically populates content based off of stuff you visited on the website. And this is all passed back through Pixel data. Pinterest has a shop or an alpha right now called Pinterest Shopping, where it's basically you get retargeted on Pinterest with products that you've viewed on a website. So it's kind of their version of a Facebook DPA, which is a dynamic product ad. It's basically like when you go look at red shoes on Target, and then you go to Facebook and you get all these ads for red shoes. That's what it is. But yeah, those are some cool stuff that I've been working on.
Can you just describe what a like full funnel is?
Yeah. So I mean, I think this is also a point of debate, especially now that the customer journey has gotten so complex with different devices and different ways that people access the internet. But the traditional marketing funnel has, I'll make it simple, with three layers. There's the awareness layer at the top. That's the biggest part of the funnel. The second layer is consideration, trial consideration. And then the bottom of the funnel is conversion. So the idea here is that if you're trying to attract new customers and gain new customers, you can't just hit them with an ad to say shop now. So if it's, you know, Joe's Pizza Joint, you've never been there, you've never heard of it, you don't know what's special about Joe's Pizza Joint. There's a million pizza joints in New York City. If Joe's Pizza Joint wants you to buy pizza from there, they can't just say, hey, Tiffany, buy pizza from us. Because you're like, I don't know who you are. Why would I do that? So the idea is that at the top of the funnel is awareness. So there is where you tell like the brand story, the brand message, like this is Joe's Pizza. We've been around since 1987. You know, my great-great-grandpa Joe started it, That's awareness. There's no shop here, buy now, only $9.99 for a pie, nothing like that. No sales messaging.
No call to action.
No call to action, exactly.
Just a story.
Exactly. So that's just to get people familiar and comfortable with the brand. And the next layer is the trial or consideration phase. And what that is, you know, things that differentiate that are like key differentiators. So it's not really like still a strong call to action here, but it's like, you know, best pizzas in town, voted number one pizzeria in Brooklyn, best prices, whatever. Like things.
Creds.
What's that?
Creds.
Yeah. Like things that like would make you want to try this place out over other places. And then at the end, it's like, buy Joe's Pizza. This is where you can get it. It's 99 cents. So it's kind of like at the top of the funnel, you spread out mass awareness to as many people as you can as many times. And then once you see that there's like an audience that is engaged with your ads or shows preferences to your ads, they get down to the next funnel. So that audience is a little bit smaller. And then once people have, so what people usually use as a KPI for that mid funnel is like a click-through rate or an engagement or something like that. And like once they've shown interest, then you retarget them again at the conversion level. Or like that's like where DPAs, the dynamic product ads, really come into play. Because once you visit a website, you're pretty high intent, you know, audience, and then it's easier to convert you.
So what are some really baby steps that someone who's either starting a business or wants to market or just even wants to test who their awareness market might be, that middle group?
Mm-hmm.
What are some steps for, like, you know, beginner steps for someone that can do start digital marketing themselves?
Yeah, I mean, so I think the easiest way to capture and convert people is through retargeting. That's like the lowest hanging fruit. If you've got people going to your website, if you retarget them, there's a high likelihood that they're gonna take whatever action you need to do. Building up a CRM database is also a great way to do it. Email is like a one-to-one communication tool. So if you have someone's email address, it's an easy way to communicate with them. And you can also use that CRM list uploaded to Facebook, retarget them on Facebook. So things like strategies like that.
I remember a couple weeks ago when we went out to Vietnamese food. Actually, it was Vietnamese Thai fusion.
Yeah.
You said to make sure that you get a Facebook pixel and install it on your website.
Yep.
That's because that's how you track the people that are coming through.
Mm-hmm.
And then you use that information to put back into Facebook so you can retarget. Is that how that happens?
You don't actually have to do anything because Facebook data is a black box. You'll never know. Facebook won't tell you who visited your website. They won't give you any emails or usernames or anything, but it will give you an audience of people that visited your website. So it'll say, you know, website visitors, and that's all you'll ever know about these people until, you know, unless you were to capture a lead from them or something. But yeah, it just automatically creates an audience of people that have visited your website.
In one, like someone basically said she was the number one teammate on the entire team. And that's pretty huge.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's taken me a long time to get here. I don't know. I care a lot about what I do. I wouldn't say that like my passion is marketing for the way I do it. It's not like something that I thought I was gonna be doing when I was younger. If I had my dream job and could get paid well, I would probably be the leader of I would probably be a part of like some women's rights organization. Like that's my, like what I really care about. But at the end of the day, it's something that I do every day. So I do care. I care about what I do and I care about doing it well. And it's nice to be recognized for it, but it's also nice to like, I mean, I stand up for myself a lot in these situations. It's been a challenge for me, but a good challenge and a growing experience to learn how to advocate for myself. I think a lot of the times people expect managers or other coworkers or whatever to kind of not read your mind, but know what you want. And I don't know. It's been a growing experience for me to learn how to advocate for myself. I think before I thought people just naturally recognize where my talents are and then assume that my talents were my passions were and then grow me in that capacity. Whereas I'm coming to find is that people just kind of like, if you're doing a good job, they kind of leave you alone and let you do it. So, I'm learning now to like advocate for myself a little bit more. I don't know if that's where you're, I don't know. I'm just, I don't know. I'm rambling now.
I think that's a really valuable life skill to have because, and it's cool that you've learned it.
Well, I'm learning it.
Right. Yeah. I don't know if we'll ever
master it.
Yeah. But I know I used to be very, I'm still pretty quiet, but now I'm more like vocal and more standing up for what I believe in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And getting there took a lot, like just to be able to do that and to like not care if not be attached to an outcome, but to like, you know.
Totally. And I think that's not being attached to an outcome is a good point to make because I think especially in the workplace and especially with women, I think we make a lot of excuses before we even try to do something, whether it's like asking for a raise or asking for a change within a department or asking or giving feedback on a boss. Before we even do it, we're just like, well, I'm not going to get a raise because the company policy is they don't give past X percent, or I'm not going to get moved to a different job role because there's no open, like we're already giving the people we would ask these things for the ammo and the excuse before we've even tried. So, you know, maybe the person, like maybe I'm right. Maybe I won't get a raise because the raise that I want because they cap out at X percent. But that should never stop me from asking. It's not my job to say no to myself. It's my boss's job to say no to me or not. And you'll never know until you try. But yeah, no, I think not being attached to an outcome is a really big part of it. And even when we know we're not going to get anything out of it and we know our boss isn't going to listen or we know a situation is just unchangeable, it's still important to say what you want to say. Because it makes you feel better, but it also lays the groundwork for, you know, either being right later down the line or if you decide to leave because your needs weren't addressed. I mean, you did everything you could, you know? So I think in all those situations, it's important to advocate for yourself, even if the outcome isn't always what you want it to be or the ideal outcome.
Yeah. For one, it's good practice.
Mm-hmm.
And for two, I like how you said laying down the groundwork because you know, if you don't say anything, you have no record of even being unhappy.
Exactly.
And what are, like, why would you leave a situation being unhappy without having, being able to resolve it or letting the other person resolve it? You know, giving them a chance.
Yep, exactly.
You know, it's like you've built up this thing in your head about what you can and can't do without just being like, hey, this is what I want. This is what I need.
Exactly.
And
if you never give someone the opportunity to give that to you, you're only selling yourself short.
Yeah, I like that. How did you start learning that?
I started wanting things and nobody was giving them to me. So I had to start asking for them. I mean, to be more specific, what I'm really talking about is I'm really interested in like business processes and things like that. Like efficiency is really important to me. So when I'm dealing with the day-to-day of marketing and my client services and things like that, I don't obviously have a lot of time to work on the nuances of asset handover and, you know, all the boring parts of my job that I find actually really interesting to try to make better. But, you know, I would work on these little projects or I'd bring them to my boss or my, you know, my director and be like, I think we could do this better if we did X, Y, and Z. And they'd be like, oh, yeah, go ahead, do it, whatever. And I thought that naturally people would understand that, like, this is something I'm good at. This is something that I, you know, I'm obviously showing interest in. So naturally somebody would be like, hey, Heather, you really like to work on processes. How about we make that part of your job? And it didn't happen because people aren't mind readers and, you know, so then I started actually saying, like, you know, this is something that I'm interested in and what I want to pursue. I just start standing up for myself in that capacity. And also just, to be honest, being overworked really forced me to stand up for myself because I knew that if I kept working at the capacity that I was going to start doing a bad job and either not do good by my clients or, you know, probably start being not nice to be around at work. So I had to start standing up for myself then, be like, I need more help or I need something.
That's awesome. That goes along with something I also learned recently that's not just related to work, but just life. Sometimes when we're so frustrated or so confused, it makes us ask better questions that get us to where we want to be. Mm-hmm. And so frustration and feeling like shit or being undervalued or about to break, when I'm about to break, those situations are almost part of the entire cycle of life.
Yep.
Because without having those, without bottoming out or like hitting the bottom, like people would say, or rock bottom, we wouldn't have like anywhere to look. You know, if we're okay just being in the middle and not going anywhere, we're actually like kind of dying inside.
Yep.
So it's good to be frustrated, I think.
Yep. I mean, not always, but every once in a while, or, you know. As the learning requires.
Yeah. I mean, if you're like constantly frustrated, there's something has to give and you're like maybe not looking at something the right way or maybe you need to get out of the situation so you can get a better view of it or, you know, leave it because it's not serving you. But yeah. I like that. But a lot of people our age have this like dissatisfaction with what they do in work. I don't know if you've noticed it, but almost like this internal, I'm not doing what I want or I'm, you know, so I wish I was doing something else.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think allows you, if you had to attribute anything, any qualities, what do you, either about work or about yourself or something else, what do you think allows you to just, and what triggered this question in my mind was when you said, this isn't what I imagined I would be doing. Mm-hmm. And if I had, if I was doing exactly what I wanted, I would be like leading or part of like a women's rights organization, which it's really not too late to start doing.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's always like, you know, the many, many years we have ahead of us to get into those things. But what keeps you like happy almost being like, okay, I'm going to do the best for my clients. I'm not going to slack. Cause I know you're not really a slacker. Like, I mean, on our group text, Heather will be like 200 texts deep by the end of the day on some days.
I'm still not caught up. That's why I was glad to see her living room in person. Cause I didn't see I scrolled past the picture this afternoon.
And, she'll emerge sometime after like 8 PM. And, the bet is always whether she's going to read the entire 200 texts or not. And, you know, she always does, but, yeah, you're into work. Yeah. I can tell you are always like, you know, thinking of better ways of doing things. You care about the people that you work with. You care about your clients. Mm-hmm. You're really into improving, like, and that's just from what I know mm-hmm. about you, even though we don't talk about work all the time, but when we do, and when I do hear you talk about it, it's, like, I just love hearing the way that you view work, and I want to know where that comes from.
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I think a couple things. Well, I think I've always just naturally been a curious and hardworking person. It's weird to say that about myself, but you know, like my parents didn't go to college. And so me being in AP classes and doing well in school was entirely up to me. You know, my parents never forced me to do that. So I think I have this, not to get all psychology, but like an internal locus of control where I feel like I'm in charge of my own life, and hard work was never thrust upon me. It's something that I embraced willingly and I chose for myself, if that makes sense. So I think there's that piece. And I think another part of it is that although, I mean, my dream job was to be a psychologist, right? So in my head, I would either be a psychologist or working for a women's rights organization or whatever. And although that isn't this job, there are elements at least of the psychology thing, like I was saying, with the data analytics and, you know, things like that. So I can isolate certain things in my job that I do actually really enjoy. I'm a bit of a data nerd. So when I get any chance to like deep dive into data or seeing the tangible evidence of me making a process more efficient and how much easier that makes other people's lives, I think is interesting. But I mean, and I guess a part of it's a choice. It's, you know, I'm at work and on a good day for 8 hours a day on average, probably a little bit more. So, you know, it is what it is. I live in New York City. I have to work. I have to pay for my apartment. So, you know, it's a bit of a choice to decide I'm going to make the best of this. Allowing the majority of my life to make me miserable would be miserable. And beyond that, I think I also, when I gave up on the idea of being a psychologist and gave up on the idea of being a travel blogger and living in Bali or whatever, I decided that I wasn't going to derive value in my life from my work. My work is just never going to be super meaningful, which is fine. I don't think that's a bad thing. It pays for my bills. It affords, and that's the thing. It's a means to an end. It pays for my bills. It allows me to live in New York City comfortably. It allows me to go to brunch. It allows me to go to Amsterdam for my birthday. And those are the things that make me happy. So I think that I've found a way to balance the purpose that work gives me and the value it has in my life, but also not making it, putting too much emphasis on the value that it should have in my life.
Do you have a favorite neighborhood spot?
In Greenpoint?
Either Greenpoint or Williamsburg. I know you just
yeah,
moved.
Greenpoint's tough because I just moved there. But for bars in Williamsburg, George and Jack's, for sure. Food, there's so much good food. Yeah. Oregano is a good Italian spot. Anna Maria's is my favorite pizza.
Oh, we just went to Pauly G's.
Oh, yeah, Pauly G's is great. Yeah.
What about that Goldie's?
Oh, Goldie's is a good new spot in Greenpoint. I've been like half doing dry January, so I feel like I haven't been out in a long time.
And do you meditate?
I do. I just started this year.
Oh, how's it going?
It's been amazing. I really do agree that it has amazing impacts on people's lives because I've felt it.
Are you going to keep it going?
I have been struggling recently, but I'm going to try to do it more regularly.
What has been your pitfalls? Like when you find that you're not doing it? Like what makes you not do it?
I feel like I just haven't prioritized it. Like I always feel like I find something else to do, which is part of why I need to meditate. So yeah, I just need to just sit down and do it.
Do you find that it's the same thing that you have to do, or is it just something else? You're like, oh, I'll do it later. Or is it like, oh, I have to go. Like grocery shopping.
Yeah, like every no, time it's you usually, sit down to it's meditate. Usually like I just rather continue to sit here and read versus like meditate. Not that it's hard to meditate or anything, but I don't know. I just, sometimes it's hard for me to get myself to do it.
Yeah, that makes sense. No judgment. Do you use visualization as a tool? Do you visualize?
I like manifest. Like, you know.
What's your manifestation process?
I mean, it's nothing complicated or anything like big, but just, you know, I'm capable, I'm worthy, I'm going to kick ass today, like that kind of manifestation.
Affirmations.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like that.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've been getting really deep into affirmations lately.
Yeah. I believe in them for sure.
I'm going to start making some tracks.
Nice.
Yeah.
I've been also starting to listen to TED Talks lately. I kind of went off on a tangent about TED Talks on the group chat, but one of them that was really interesting was by Amy Cuddy, I want to say. That's the one I sent to the group, but it's the one about the superhero pose. But it literally talks about how body language and the way you think about yourself changes, like physically changes things about you. They studied that it decreased cortisol in their test subjects, which is the stress hormone. So like the better you feel about yourself, the less stressed you are. And the more capable you are in handling situations and the more capable that you're perceived by other people. I don't know. It's a whole interesting thing, but yeah, that's why I believe in like manifestation, affirmations and like meditation and all of those things, because science actually shows that those things help. Yeah.
I like that. Backed up by science. Do you have any superpowers?
Do I?
Yeah.
I once had a dream that my sister was pregnant, and then she told me 2 days later she was pregnant. So.
Oh, interesting.
No, but seriously, superpowers. I don't know. Probably, but I can't think of any.
Cool. Is there anything you want that you don't already have?
Materialistically or anything?
It could be anything.
A plane ticket to Bali.
Okay.
That's my goal for the next month.
Nice. Well, that should be pretty easy to acquire.
Yeah. I mean, it's easy to buy it. It's the picking the dates and getting the time off work and all that stuff that's difficult.
Is there any, my last question. Is there anything you want to put out there in the world? Is there anything you want to say that you haven't said yet?
I think maybe just to reinforce what I said before is to advocate for yourself. Don't assume that people know what you want in the workplace or in relationships or in friendships. Regardless of that, what the expected outcome is, go into it with open eyes and say things just because you want to advocate for yourself, and there's nothing wrong with that. And stay positive. There's always tomorrow. The sun is always shining. Well, not always shining, but the sun is always shining somewhere.
Yeah. I like that. Well, thank you so much for being here. Thank you for being my first guest.
Yay.
Thank you for being an amazing